we can discuss this sufficiently. Let's move to post-employment benefits.
So what you, it's going to do the presentation, it's just first.
Oh, the last two.
We're going to do all those as well.
Thank you, Hans. Good afternoon, everyone. Agenda paper 15 summarizes the feedback received on the research project on post-employment benefits in response to the 2015 agenda consultation.
I'll just say it's Can's first time at the board, so be nice.
I'm a little bit nervous. I'm doing my best. And agenda consultation and other outreach conducted. 61 respondents to the agenda consultation provided feedback on this project, and approximately half of these respondents thought that the project should have high or medium importance. A significant number of these respondents think that the accounting issues for hybrid plan should be addressed as a priority. More specifically, these respondents are concerned that application of the discount rate requirement in IAS 19 does not reflect the economic substance of some hybrid plans. This is because it creates an inconsistency between the estimate of cash flows an entity will pay to its employees and the discount rate used to calculate the present value of the defined benefit obligation. We explain the issue in more detail in Appendix C of this paper. The other respondents think that the project should have low importance because they have not experienced any major implementation issues with IAS 19, while they think that other projects are more important. In addition, we received feedback through the online survey, which was consistent with feedback through the agenda consultation. Having considered that feedback, we recommend that the board should assess whether it is possible to develop a solution to address the accounting mismatch concern for hybrid plans without undertaking the comprehensive review of IAS 19. Appendix C outlines one approach that falls as capped ultimate cost adjustment model, which we think might address the hybrid plan issue. We think that further research should focus only on this approach, and we do not recommend any other work on post-employment benefit at this stage. We have one question for the board. Does the board agree with the staff recommendation? I hand over the discussion to the board. Thank you.
Well, Khan, you did a good job, so you will not be in need of a post-employment benefit. I give the floor to the board. Mary?
Khan, I thought it was a very good project in terms of pulling together the different pieces of information and weighing them up. I think first let me start with the appendix that looked at the issues submitted to the interpretation committee and worked through. And what I found interesting is that many of them are wanting increasing levels of detail or certainty about how you apply 19, not necessarily because of the hybrid plans issue. So, you know, in terms of filtering out what could be called false signals, I think the volume of issues at the interpretation committee is not evidence about the importance of importance or not of the hybrid plan. I also noted, and you did separate it, which I think is important, that some of those who supported doing an IAS 19 project disagree with the conclusion about what discount rate to use, and that, again, that's not limited to hybrid plans. I say this as background for saying, as much as I, sorry creature that I am, actually would find it interesting and satisfying to try and resolve some of the issues that IAS 19 creates about the application to hybrid plans, I think we should do nothing rather than pursue the alternative that you identified. We have tried several times to have a surgical approach on only hybrid plans. We have not succeeded. I know that you're saying, let's just assess one possibility, and if this can't work, then do nothing. But I think we should just cut our losses now. And I think as soon as we start talking about it in terms of accounting mismatch between obligation and discount rate, we'll get people who are not in hybrid plans saying, well, we have an accounting mismatch too. And so even if it were successful, I don't think we could keep it contained. And in the overall scheme of things, I just don't think it rises to our top two or three priorities. So all of that leads me to say, park it, and don't even do the one follow-up step that you have identified.
Stephen?
I disagree with Mary. I think it'd be completely unacceptable for us to do nothing on this. This has been a problem for so many years. I know it's not every jurisdiction, but the jurisdictions it does affect, it really annoys them. Mm-hmm. And I think we should do something about it. It is a problem with IAS 19. It just is illogical to compound at one rate and discount at a different rate, and you get a stupid answer. And I don't think we can ever defend IAS 19 and say that it's the right answer for these hybrid plans. I didn't like this capped return model when it was first suggested because it ignores the time value of the options. I accept that it solves one problem, which is to get the cash flows consistent with the discount rate, and it solves the problem of the liability being overstated at the moment as a result of that incorrect discount rate. But at the moment, the liability is wrong for two reasons. The cash flows and the discount rate are inconsistent, so that generally leads to an overstatement of the liability, and the time value of the higher of guarantee option is being ignored, which understates the liability. Now, the net effect at the moment is generally the liability is overstated, I understand. And the problem with the cap return model is that we'll get rid of the overstatement but still be left with the understatement. So we'll go from the liabilities being overstated to the liabilities being understated, which I'm not sure is a great outcome. I would like us to do something. I would like us to be not constrained by this cap return model. If we could develop the cap return model to include time value in the model, maybe have a stochastic capped return model, then I would be much happier.
Darren?
So I agree with what Steve said. I find this a particularly difficult problem, as Steve's highlighted, a particularly difficult one to explain to people who are in the process of considering the adoption of IFRS or who are looking at the outcome of having adopted IFRS and are dealing with the implications. And although pensions are not very often considered a fundamental part of the business, the variations in this do have a significant impact on businesses. And increasingly what we're finding, and I think it came through in one of the letters you received, the South African letter, is the companies are starting to retailor their pension funds to escape the accounting consequences, which everybody seems to agree are not economic consequences. And the effect of that is starting to bring regulators in some of the developing countries into the discussion about whether IFRS does what it's meant to do. And I think it's just, if I think at the very least we have to see whether there is the opportunity to do something relatively small and relatively quick that can help with the problem. When this was discussed at a previous time at the board table, I was one who said rather we go for one big solution and try and solve it surgically. I accept that anything we do surgically is going to have problems around the edges, but I think given what we're looking at in terms of potential resource constraints and other things, and potentially the amount of time we would take to complete a big project, I think we should at least have a go at trying to see if we can fix this on a narrow scope basis.
I second that, though. Also in my own country, this is a really big problem. Really big pension funds. Their liabilities have been overstated.
When we did outreach in Switzerland some time ago, it was raised as one of the significant obstacles to IFRS adoption in Switzerland.
Gary?
Thank you. It, I'm also supportive of going forward in some capacity on this subject. Just wasn't clear to me, Con, is when we talk hybrid, at least in context of this paper, are we talking ones that got a mixture of a defined contribution plan with a minimum defined benefit, or are we, and if I read paragraph 6C, A, and B, you would think that you're only dealing with the assets, and therefore the assets always equal liabilities, and therefore it's a hybrid because it's not a classic DB plan, but it's not a DC plan. So I'm not sure which one you're thinking of in here, but I would tell you in former life, I dealt with this issue for 25 years in at least four countries, and the three largest actuarial firms in the world. What always killed this thing in terms of trying to make sense of it is you start off with, I have a DB model, I am going to find a way to make it work with the DB model. And I just don't think that's going to work very well. I think whether you go to a DC model or a brand new model, I think you really got to think in those terms that these things don't fit very well in a DB model, and that's where it's always died, is trying to make it fit in it. And unless you're going to amend the DB model, I think you should be thinking a third model.
And one question. And it goes to your analysis of the models that you rejected. If a company issues an obligation that it intends to fulfill, and it doesn't trade, it's not a market-based instrument, it's a private placement, if you will, why would we permit that entity to fair value that obligation that it intends to fulfill? But you would argue that the issuance of pension liabilities or post-employment benefits, which an entity intends to fulfill, shouldn't be eligible for fair value. What's the difference there? Neither trade.
We discussed using fair value for at least some types of pension plan in the discussion paper we put out in 2008. Nobody supported the idea.
But that's not the rationale you have in here. So I understand what the 2008 paper said. I read it as I came in the door here back in 2009. And we actually were very close to moving in that direction, but we decided not to. It's the age-old issue about volatility, you know, in reported profit and loss.
It was a fair value through P&L, which was part of the problem, but also the scope. The definition of hybrid plans there, I think, included average salary plans.
Yes, it did.
So the scope would have been, it would have taken in a whole load of things that are traditionally thought of as DB plans and moved them into a fair value through P&L. So that was the other reason why people reacted negatively.
Right, but here it seems to be you're hanging your hat primarily on the notion that we've used in the insurance contracts project that the entity intends to fulfill as opposed to transfer the obligation to a third party. And I don't understand why that should be an obstacle or hurdle to the application of fair value. It doesn't resonate with me.
Well, I suppose our thinking's moved on a bit since the 2000. I mean, the idea of using an up-to-date current value, which we do in pensions and have for a long time, but the thing that's missing is that it doesn't include any sort of risk adjustment, and it doesn't specify you have to think about all the outcomes. It's a best estimate. So although it's up-to-date, it's not fair value, and that it doesn't encompass all the information. I think now we would say something like the measure that we're thinking of in insurance for fulfillment cash flows would be an appropriate sort of measure. The problem is making that, we either make that change for all pension plans, which would be a huge deal, right, or we try and identify a subpopulation, and that's what's always caused us the problem before, coming back to what Mary was saying, is that we've never managed to successfully scope a group of plans that it would be appropriate to do some sort of change for. The advantage of the capped proposal that we put in here is that it defines its own scope. So and that's why the staff think it would be worth pursuing, Mary, given despite all our failures in the past. This sort of
littered with dead bodies.
And absolutely, I don't disagree. But this has the advantage that it the mechanism affects the plans that it needs to affect without distorting or changing anything else. And that's why I'd be worried, Steve, about trying to go further, because the moment you go further, you start getting into the question of, well, why are we doing it for these plans and not for those plans, and what's our scope? And that's always led to disaster. Well, failure in the past.
See, I guess I would just conclude with this final thought, and that's I would advocate what Stephen is saying. I would continue to do research here. I think there's a simple model on the table. I think we continue to fight the battle of the age-old issue of where you report the changes in the nature of this asset liability, and hence the reason why the conceptual framework discussion and debate around, you know, how and when you use OCI is so critical. And I think if we were to use presentation, a lot of these simple measurement approaches would be, you know, much more attractive, and we would solve more accounting questions in a more expedient way. But the big concern here is really, you know, is that going to flow through my P&L? Am I going to be held accountable for that? Is that something I'm deemed to, in theory, control? I mean, all those issues, I think, can be tackled across a myriad of these agenda consultation issues by dealing with them through presentation, because continuing to write very complex accounting standards that take years in the making and then very difficult to understand, I just don't see that as a path forward.
Just going back to part of your original question, Pat, about why there's discussion here of fair value versus fulfillment. The reaction we got in the insurance contracts discussion paper in 2008, where we proposed exit value, was the label we used, basically. And we got a very widespread and strong reaction that said that people found the notion of fair value counterintuitive for something you're going to fulfill. And even if the calculation you got came to exactly the same number as fair value, they would find it counterintuitive as an objective. And that was a very widespread reaction we got there.
Yeah, no, there's clearly pluses and minuses to all these things. It's a question of, do you want to reduce complexity in financial reporting and understandability of information in financial statements? And you want to solve problems in a more expedient way. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not advocating that position at all. I'm just saying, when I look at all of the other alternatives, this one is attractive to me, and I can solve it through presentation.
But I just think hiding the complexity behind a shield of fair value, because I think if you went to fair values, estimating it would be incredibly complex.
Why do you say that?
Well, because it's not markets. There's, you know, there's just the same as the insurance argument.
But you have a standard today, IFRS 13, for example, that deals with level 3 instruments where you have the exact same issues.
Sure. But it doesn't pretend to be not complex.
No, but we published it and put it out as a standard.
But pension, the IAS 19 is complex, just to measure the liability. I'm not sure fair value would be any more complex. What Pat said about fair value, that there's been problems in the past with proposing fair value. I'm sure the industry would welcome a fair value option in this area, so long as the fair value change went through OCI, so all the normal DB accounting, but just measure it at fair value. That simple seems to me a simple solution that would be welcomed in many of the jurisdictions that have the problem at the moment.
Interesting thoughts.
Yeah. Well, can we ask the staff to pursue a simple solution
It's a simple solution.
Not there, which is not there, of
course. This is subject to the discussion on the agenda consultation.
Yeah, and I think you probably ought not to take a decision until we discuss the agenda consultation on Thursday when you weigh it up with the other projects.
Fair enough.
But I must say, I find it hard to stomach in a period where pension schemes are already under tremendous pressure for real economic reasons, if they are also under artificial pressure from the accounting. In my country, for example, all the defined benefits plans have moved towards hybrid schemes because otherwise they are unaffordable, and then they get an accounting that punishes them. It's hard to stomach. Then I would rather see a solution that perhaps is a little bit sways in the other direction than this. But I cannot oversee what is doable in a short period of time without too much work.
Yeah, and I think the rationale for
We don't want to open a can of worms.
Yeah, and I think the rationale for Staff's proposal was we saw an opportunity for something that we thought might have some benefit, that we thought might be doable relatively quickly, but we'd need to do more work to establish whether that's really the case. But we didn't want to get into anything wider than that.
Okay, so do we need to vote or?
I think maybe we should take the decision on Thursday, then we do the consultation.
Okay. Thank you.